All right, there aren't many of us to come to order, but this meeting will come to order. And this is really our last day of hearing bills.
I'll move the minutes.
So we're going to go ahead and hear the bills. We will do the minutes toward the end when we know we have a quorum. Thank you, Representative Heidgerger. All right, we'll start with House File 3628, authored by Representative Saylor. And I will move House File 3628 before the committee for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill. Representative Saylor, do you wish to discuss your bill? You had one verbal amendment, I believe.
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair and members. I do have one oral amendment to get this bill in the proper shape, and that is on line 13, changing the number that is indicated there from 523,000 to 524,000. This brings this in line with the Senate bill, and it also brings it in line, if you look on your sheets that were included on the cost of this renovation, you will see that number on here. So that is my oral amendment. Thank you.
All right. Would you please address your bill and why you were asking for this money?
Thank you again, Madam Chair and members. You know, one year...
Wait, I have to vote on that. I'm sorry. I'm sorry, I forgot all about it. We have to vote on changing the 523 to 524. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Amendment is adopted. It's just $1,000, Representative. Go ahead.
You know, one year ago, just a little over a year ago, the unthinkable happened in one of our school districts in Minnesota. Every parent and every teacher's worst nightmare came to pass. And the school district, the Red Lake Nation, and the state of Minnesota have done a wonderful job in trying to put things back together for the students and the families at Red Lake. There were many, many things that had to happen that were required by the federal government and by law enforcement to make this school once again ready for having the students and the teachers back in their learning environment in a safe method. There were, as I say, a number of expenses, which I will have the testifier, Mr. Hammett, speak to. But I do ask people also to, members, to think about the fact that this is separate from bonding. I know a number of people here on the floor and throughout the state are thinking that there was money for bonding, and then they're thinking, here's Red Lake again. I ask you to separate these two issues in your mind, because what happened at Red Lake a year ago had nothing to do with the regular building process, and had this happened anywhere else at any other time, we would be looking at how to help one of our Minnesota school districts get back to the business of teaching their students. I thank you for your consideration, and I will defer to Monty Hammett. Thank you.
Mr. Hammett.
Thank you, Madam Chair, committee members. The school district is asking for assistance to get some reimbursement for the items that they had to spend out of their general fund in meeting the obligations imposed by them by federal, state, and other law enforcing agencies during this period of time. I also want to make sure that the committee also, Madam Chair and committee members, understand what we have done in our sheet that we put together with dollars and cents on for you to review, which is in your packet. This shows a total representation of what the reconstruction had to be done based on the federal judge's orders. And there's also a separation where the majority of all of the dollars spent for the independent school district, which we're referring to, refers to security measures that were taken at our Panema Elementary School, at our Red Lake Early Childhood, Red Lake Panema, or Red Lake Elementary School, and the Red Lake Middle School and High School. This is a tremendous amount of dollars that were required to replace locks, put in magnetic door closures, card swiping door closures, metal detectors, security desks, and this whole conglomeration for the entire district. And this is where the total of where we come at, and I'll be more than happy to take just a couple minutes, Madam Chair and committee members, to show you up in the funding sources and identify those for you. The $373,256 was from the insurance proceeds by the Berkeley company. And if you go down on ours under number 304, cleanup, that was paid for by the Berkeley company out of the 373. The second line of 103 Department of Justice Department, that was the $455,000 that the Justice Department presented to the Red Lake School District to, as part of the condition, to make sure that there was a complete re-renovation of the facility and it would not look like it did prior to the incident of the 321. These were mandates that we had to do. The state legislation, we thank you folks for the $50,000, and then the school district's amount of general fund dollars of $524,000. So you will see that this is where the total funding sources come from, and we've also identified the total debits of what the school district had. And what we did is we set aside on the right-hand column, you'll see down there, paid for by independent school district under the furniture, equipment, and technology, those dollars. And then you get down under line, under item 6601, the $160 for the alternates 1 and 2 by the school district. And these totals come down to 702 at the bottom of the page of 524. And this is what the district would hope that the committee would consider to help us regenerate and put dollars back into the general fund for the purposes which these dollars had to be used for by different recommendations of security through a series of meetings all summer long and different federal folks coming in and also the state folks and working with the State Department of Education, State Department of Corrections, and these folks, Madam Chair.
May I just ask you, Mr. Hammett, one question. Why is the cost so much greater than the amount that the insurance company paid? I mean, the insurance company ended up paying hardly anything, essentially, compared to the whole bill.
Madam Chair and committee members, yes, and I think I can answer that for you, Madam Chair. The insurance company would not pay you, the district, any more dollars than what it would take to put it back in the exact same condition as what it was prior to 321. They would not allow you to do any deviation from that. But we could use the proceeds, and this is where the Justice Department's, for us to receive any additional funds, we had had to totally reconfigure that area where the students were hurt at. And we only had one classroom, the A-plus lab, that we're able to keep, which they approved. Otherwise, that total area has been totally reconfigured in accordance to the Justice Department's requirements.
All right, thank you, Mr. Hammett. Are there any other questions for Representative Saylor or Mr. Hammett? I guess I would like to ask you, you know, what shape is your district in financially, Mr. Hammett?
I'm not sure if I'm the proper one to answer that, Madam Chair and committee members, but I did speak with the accountant today, spoke with the superintendent last night, and the school district seems to be in fairly and fair financial consideration. There was some savings of about $200,000 from last spring when there were no activities about in the school system, from activities that normally would have taken place from March 21st to the end of school. And there was some dollar savings there that went into the school district. But they're, I think, doing, from what I'm gathering, they have an annual expenditure of about $26 million. And they're maintaining, as I was told, approximately a 2-month reserve. And that, I guess, is what their auditors, of what I was told, suggested that the school just do. And actually, it should probably be even higher, I understand.
Representative Newman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Given the fact that the witness is not real sure on the numbers, I'm wondering if Mr. Crow or Mr. Strom by any chance have, for instance, numbers on the amount in the general fund balance, et cetera, give us a little better idea.
Thank you, Mr. Newman. Mr. Crow.
Madam Chair and Representative Newman, the December 05 preliminary general fund unreserved balance for fiscal 05 for the Red Lake School District is $5.4 million, an increase over FY04 of about $500,000, which represents about 29% of their general fund.
Of their yearly?
Their general operating, their operating fund.
All right. Representative Demmer, did you have a question also?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Actually, I was going on the same lines. I've got the information here. Just as a thought, I'm going to think out loud a bit here. Which can be dangerous, Madam Chair. I realize that, but I'll to think out loud, I mean. The fund balance, 18, looks like the general fund expenditures are a little over $18 million for the district. They have over $5 million in general fund balance. That's about just almost 4 months, the way it looks to me, Madam Chair, of fund balance, which I don't know if that's good or bad, but if two is good, then four is much better. The other thing it was interesting is to see that there's been about $400,000 increase in the fund balance in the 1 year. And, you know, we've got expenditures, shortages of money, and I'm interested, I don't know, Mr. Hammett, if you can answer this, but at a time when money is short and you're trying to do all these things, how did your fund balance go up by almost $500,000?
Madam Chair and committee members, I'm totally not aware of exactly how that happened, but I know there are some things that they've shared with me. Our fund balance increase, to my knowledge, had to do a lot of activities not being able to be had at the time. Now, that was one. The other thing out of the fund balance, I was also told that there's a reserve for the teacher's severance pay of like $2.9 million and portions for that for the health retirement of the teachers and the staff, which the district pays 100% of. And I know they're working on this to try to change this, and I think you had brought that up when you were up there, Representative Hammer. And there's they've got to have in the course of this, they got some this family coverage which they try to cover, and the other note I got here is that they do the fund balance policy as recommended by the auditor. 2005, they missed their fund balance goal by $743,718. So these are the reports that they got. Madam Chair and Representative Demmer from the school district.
Representative Demmer, did you have?
Well, Madam Chair, just as a thought, I think our target is about $6.6 million, and I see that the Representative Saylor, your bill is for $523,000. You'd be using, what's the math on that quickly, 8% of our target or whatever for this, and it's interesting that the fund balance has gone up by, within broad thinking, that amount. It seems as though in this year when we're trying to do lots of things, Madam Chair, with the limited resources we have in a non-funding year, that maybe we should look to Red Lake to utilize some of their increase in fund balance to take care of this need that they have at this particular time. I understand the need. You know, I've been there and I've seen it. But trying to be fair to the rest of the state too, Madam Chair, that'd be my thoughts.
Mr. Hammett, very quickly, then we are going to have to move on.
One of the things that you folks did, that the legislators did for us, which also made the fund balance stay an increase, also was to freeze last year, last November. They froze that so that we wouldn't have a tremendous, our fund balance would probably have been wiped out. And that helped when we got the same rate. And I think they started in November, I believe it was, for the student enrollment data. And I think it's froze to 2007. Otherwise, we'd have been, our fund balance would probably have been gone.
Madam Chair?
I think
Mr. Hammond, you're referring to the fact that the student count was frozen. Even
yes.
though students left, you're referring to the fact that we froze that up there to make sure the funding stayed there. Yes. Is that right?
Madam Chair, yes.
I just want to make it clear for the members.
All right. Do you have any last comments? Because we do have to move on.
Okay. Thank you, Madam Chair and members. I appreciate the opportunity to speak about this bill before you. I would just also like to sort of address Representative Demers' comment or concern. You know, this wasn't a planned event. I know what the targets are. We know that we're really struggling within the state of Minnesota to address our educational issues fairly throughout the state. This is like a flood. You can't plan for it. I know that, you know, when we had the floods of 97, we had other events that happened. When a catastrophe occurs, there's no way that you can plan ahead for that. And I'm just asking you to consider the fact that this was not something anybody wanted to do, and we need to deal with it and move ahead so that the students there can move on with their learning. And I also recognize that the law enforcement and federal government did put many mandates on the school district, well beyond just the high school building, but also to the two elementaries, saying that you will put in magnetic locks and you will have all these other safety devices. So, again, there's some extenuating circumstances, and I recognize that we have a tight budget, but I certainly ask for your favorable consideration of this bill. Thank you.
Thank you very much, and this bill will be laid over for possible inclusion. Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair and committee members, very much.
You're welcome, sir. All right, moving on to the next bill. Two of them are mine. Representative Demmer, you want to?
Hey, Representative Sikora, House File 3687, proceed.
Mr. Chairman, I would like to move House File 3687 before the committee for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill. And this bill is actually pretty simple. This addresses when you have a referendum and you've got the inflationary piece in there that you were asking the voters if they will allow it to go up with inflation. I think now you have to do the price, the cost, that you're asking, the amount of money you're asking for, plus the dollars that would be equated per child, is that right, in an inflationary rate? And this would allow them to just do the dollars per kid plus the inflation rate of the CPI, I believe. And Mr. Crow, would you define just what the inflation rate is that would be used?
Mr. Crow?
Mr. Chair and members, the bill refers to a section of law that defines the inflationary increase as the consumer price index for urban consumers. So it's basically the CPI that you hear about.
Okay. Thank you. And I have with me Mr. Tyne, the superintendent of Roseville, and Tom Berge, the business manager from Minnetonka, to kind of explain what this does.
Who's going to go first? I'll take a guess. Mr. Tyne?
We're going to let Mr. Berge go first. He's the most knowledgeable.
Okay.
Most business managers would agree with that statement.
Welcome, Mr. Berge. Welcome, Mr. Berge. Introduce yourself for the tape and welcome to the committee.
Thank you. My name is Tom Berge. I'm Director of Finance and Operations for Minnetonka Schools. Mr. Chair, committee members. Referendums are very critical to the ability of metro school districts to provide a quality education for students. And it's not only just metro districts, but most districts throughout the state. They really are no longer an optional item. For most districts, they're a needed source of revenue. And West Metro districts typically have higher referendum amounts and therefore are sometimes viewed as high spending districts. In the schedule that was just distributed to you, we have pointed out or provided some comparisons on the amount spent per pupil for West Metro districts versus a selected group of Greater Minnesota districts. pointing out the fact that West Metro districts typically are probably spending less and ranking at a lower amount, a lower level in the state than you anticipate. Minnetonka, for instance, ranks 124th in the state, which isn't even in the top third. Edina is 112th, and Wayzata is at 192nd. As a result, the ability to pass referendums is critical to offset the below-average categorical revenue that these districts receive and above-average operating costs. Under the current law, a district must state the maximum per pupil amount when requesting or when writing the ballot language. If a district, for instance, is proposing a 10-year referendum levy, we are required to project out what the maximum amount would be during that 10-year period and state that amount on the ballot. In other words, we have to state a much higher amount than the amount that we anticipating needing for the immediate future. And then the per pupil amount grows from year to year, but the ballot question has to state the higher amount. And when you look at trying to communicate that to voters, to communicate why a higher amount is stated, becomes a real challenge. Referendums are difficult to pass to begin with. We've had six in our district since 1991. Three have passed and three have failed. And, you know, referendums really aren't, as I said, optional. We have over 80% of the districts in the state depending upon operating referendums for revenue. And when we're looking at a situation with probably 70% of our residents not having students in school, it makes it most difficult to convince them that it's in their interest to vote yes. And when they're looking at a per pupil amount that's significantly higher than the amount that's going to be levied, it's very difficult to explain why that difference exists. House File 3687 makes explanation of the ballot question more straightforward by enabling districts to ask for the per pupil amount they anticipate in the first year, after which that amount would increase by the inflationary adjustment that's already built into law. An approval of this bill would enable local districts to focus on why the referendum money is needed for a local district and explain that to our constituents rather than trying to explain why there's such a differential between the amount on the ballot and the dollar amount that's going to be requested. With that, I thank you for your consideration.
Okay, Mr. Tyne.
Thank you. Chair and committee members, my name is John Tyne. I'm superintendent of Roseville Area Schools. And I'm going to find myself in an interesting position probably later this month where I'm going to ask our school board to go for or seek a referendum from our community. And one of the things, the questions that they're going to ask is how much is that going to cost per pupil? And the statement that I'm going to make is an increase of about $325 per pupil unit. But on the ballot, I'm probably going to have to estimate that at about $435 to $450 per pupil unit increase. At that point, somebody's going to question my credibility and also how forthright we as a school district are with the public. They're also going to ask what the total amount is going to be that's going to be raised. And my question is going to be, do you mean what we're going to get the first year or what I estimate it's going to be in 10 years? Do I tell them I think the number of students we have is going to increase or decrease, and then to make a guess at what the cost of living or the increase is going to be over that 10 years is almost impossible. I guess what I would really like and would really appreciate is if we could make it so that school district finance could be as simple as it possibly could be. And so that when we tell our community that we're going to increase taxes by a certain amount, that we could honestly state that, lay it out, maintain and keep our promises. Our credibility within our community is judged on a daily basis. And for us to go out and state one amount and then put another amount on a ballot really makes it, puts us in a very, very difficult position. One of the things that you are well aware of and that our district tries to do to build that public trust is each year in May, we hold a budget hearing, not required by law, but we hold it so that our community can come in and find out exactly what we're spending, where we're spending, and how much it's going to be. And each year, we know that we have the truth in taxation hearing where the levy is put before the public so that people can come in and testify and make comments concerning the board's action. So we think there are safeguards involved so that if this bill was brought forward, that our community would get a very straight, simple, forward answer of what we intend to do with school districts. And with those comments, I'll stand for questions.
Okay, members, questions for either the author or either of the testifiers? Now, if my understanding is correct of reading the bill, what we're basically saying is that the district would be allowed to put a dollar amount and also state that it could increase, that it will increase. And this would be a choice of the district, whether or not you have the language stated on the, I guess the question, if you will, that this will, this may go up, that it may go up or will go up with the rate of inflation. So a school board could choose not to have that language or choose to have that language. Is that correct?
Yes, Mr. Chair, that's how we understand it.
Mr. Berge, okay. Any questions, members? Representative Sikora? Anything else?
No. I mean, this is just a one-line change, but I think it makes sense when you realize how many questions you get about how you explain what's going on here. So I think this will help stem some of those questions and make it a little more easy to understand for the voters.
Okay. I'm not hearing any questions. Thank you for your testimony. House File 3687 will be laid open for possible inclusion.
Thank you, Chair.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Representative Sikora, you want to go to your House File 4071?
I have one more simple little bill, Mr. Chairman.
Okay.
And this relates to, and I think, you know, you may want to look at this as we go along, but what this relates to is, you know, we're always requiring districts to do, you know, have certain reserved accounts. And then over time, those accounts are no longer necessary, but somehow we never get around to taking those demands or those mandates off the books. And what this will do is take some of those mandates off the books. And Representative Heidgerken, you had an amendment for this bill, didn't you?
Okay, Madam Chair, are you familiar with that amendment?
I am familiar with the amendment.
I guess we can do that now if you're open to that.
Yes, I am open to this amendment, and what this amendment does is there's one little vestige of the profiles of learning here that references a report that superintendents were required to make on, you know, what they have to do to get 80% student passage of the BSC in eighth grade, et cetera. And we're no longer doing that in this fashion. So there's no reason to mandate that report either.
Madam Chair, excuse me a second. I'm sorry, you're Representative Sikora now.
That's fine.
Representative Heidgerken, do you want to move this amendment?
Yes, I'll move that amendment. It was a bill that Representative Biskins isn't here, and if we're going to bring it up in policy, and he just offered his amendment later on, it's the last of the profiles, and when I made a round to my 13 school districts, just about each and every superintendent made this request. So, and it's a report that nobody looks at anymore, as Representative Sikora mentioned. Thank you.
Okay, for the record, this is a proposed amendment by Representative Heidgerken on House File 4071. The amendment is 06-5865.
Have to vote.
Okay, I'm supposed to read this part. Representative Heidgerken moves to amend House File 4075 as follows. Page 1, after line 4, insert the text from 1.6 through 2.26. Okay, any other discussion on the amendment? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Amendment's adopted. Okay, Representative Sikora, to your bill.
All right, we will go on with the rest of the bill. And these are various reserve accounts that are required right now, some of them obsolete, some of them not as obsolete as others. And so if you have questions concerning them, I have with us Jan Johnson from Burnsville Schools, who will kind of walk through this and explain each of these accounts and why we may or may not need them at this point in time. Ms. Johnson.
Ms. Johnson.
Thank you all. I'm Jan Johnson, Director of Accounting with the Burns-Hilligan Savage School District and the current president of NASBO, the Minnesota Association of School Business Officials. I'd like to thank Representative Sikora for authoring this bill and providing us with the opportunity to have some input regarding it. First of all, as Representative Sikora has mentioned, this is the first part of this bill is very much a cleanup of obsolete categories. If you go down the list, or actually up the list of reserve accounts that are mentioned, the funding for the majority of these categories has been eliminated from 3 to 11 years ago. For example, the parental involvement money was eliminated in 1995. School districts see the value of spending money in every one of these categories and feel that, you know, our money needs to be devoted to things that benefit kids. For instance, with parental involvement in Burnsville, we have continued to allocate money to our site councils and parental involvement up until about 2 years ago when we no longer could afford to do that. In all the cases with the negative reserves, we cannot let them go into a deficit position and carry negative reserves. That really doesn't provide a true picture of what happens with the money, the categorical money that's there. Quite often, school districts spend more than is allocated in these categories and would be showing a negative reserve if that was an allowable thing to do. Again, in the case of Burnsville, we have never carried a reserved fund balance for basic skills because we have always exceeded the dollars available in that particular category and would be showing negatives. There are slightly over 30 general fund reserve fund balances. If we eliminate the number that are on this list, that still leaves over half that number that we are having to account for separately. This truly constitutes somewhat micromanagement of some very small pieces of money. It adds to the administrative cost and burden. And within our accounting systems, we are well able to account for all these dollars and show both the income and expenses related to them without specifically putting them into these reserve categories. In eliminating some of these reserves, it also speaks to giving schools a little more ability to locally control their expenditures. Again, the districts want to spend the money in ways that benefit our students and really are looking to get rid of some obsolete and old language that is in law. The second part of the bill that deals with the study of our data processing systems, it would be a major move towards efficiency in the business functions in schools. We currently have at least 5 different reporting systems, and it's quite an alphabet soup. We have UFARS, SARS, MARS, EDRS, EMAP. We function internally with computerized systems capturing all of the data in all of those systems. And what happens is we often have to take that data and manually re-enter it into one of the other systems to do our state reporting. It's a very time-consuming and inefficient way to operate, and we look forward to a close and careful review of those processes. There would be costs related to this at the state level and for us and our service providers. But it would, in the long run, provide a huge efficiency and time saving and accuracy related to our data.
Do you want to address
Thank you, Ms. Johnson.
Are there any questions from members of the committee about the reserve accounts that this bill would eliminate?
Members, anything? Representative Dabney.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Sikora, I guess as I was tracking your initial statements, it sounded like the goal was to repeal requirements for fund balances in obsolete programs.
Exactly, reserve accounts and pretty much.
And all of these?
Well, I was wondering about the staff development. Is that a different old staff development? Or?
There are, on this list, I believe there are 4 to 5 that are currently active. Staff development being one of them. Again, in looking at eliminating the reserve for fund or for staff development, we are not looking at eliminating the expenditures or the need to spend money on staff development programs. We are looking at some additional local ability to control those dollars. In the case of Burnsville, our teachers have voted to put the staff development reserve onto the salary schedule. We still spend dollars on staff development, but we are into programs. We are looking at different ways of doing staff development, train-the-trainer programs, other mechanisms for providing those services to our teachers and ultimately to our staff, or our students with better teachers, and having more flexibility within the system. And just the reserves really don't address the issues that are out there. Putting these dollars into reserved accounts.
Mr. Chair, thank you. To the test fire, and ma'am, I'm sorry, I missed your... I know your school district. Johnson, that should be...
And
Johnson. can you identify for me the other 3 or 4 fund balances that actually are existing? It's just I'm trying to get my brain wrapped around the original presentation of the bill versus what seems to be...
Staff development, the Area Learning Center programs... I believe the contract and state-approved alternative programs, basic skills, and I am not absolutely sure, but I believe the first grade preparedness.
Mr. Chair, Representative Scott, Ms. Johnson, this may be a perfectly reasonable thing. I just think it's a different conversation that we need to have a little more nuanced a conversation about fund balances for things that don't exist anymore versus fund balances for things that do. So,
yeah, thank you, Representative Dabney. I've got a question, Ms. Johnson. Let's use staff development as an example. I think right now we have the 2% of revenues that I think need to go to staff development. And assuming, I'm interested in your comment about it being on the schedule, but assuming that the 2% is not all spent, does that... What happens to the money at the end of the biennium for the school district, at the end of the budget year for the school district?
It goes into fund balance, and it is accounted for separately. There are, within the UFAR systems, we do identify staff development dollars, and it would be, it still is identified as staff development money. It wouldn't necessarily sit in a separate reserved fund balance account, and the district would make choices about how to spend that into the future.
So, Ms. Johnson, if I'm understanding correctly, at the end of the budget period, if it's not all spent, it goes to the general fund and can be used in anything then at that point, since it's not reserved anymore? Is that right?
I believe most districts would attempt to use the dollars
right.
in the fashion in which they were originally intended to be used.
Okay, but this would eliminate the fund, the money going into that fund. So
right, into
okay.
the reserve.
Okay, Representative Lindsay.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Ms. Johnson, on line 24, it says teacher programs for which specific funding is no longer available. Can you give an example of one of those teacher programs, and then what is meant by specific funding?
Well, that is...
Ms. Johnson, I think Mr. Strom from our staff could weigh in on that.
Well, I do have the definition from our UFARS accounting system for that. Is that okay? Represents available resources for the Family Connection Programs, Minnesota Statute 124D.25 to 124D.29, and the Teacher Mentoring Program. This reserve may be used by the district for the district's share of the portion of the teaching contract that is in addition to the standard teaching contract of the district. See Minnesota Statute 124D.31. This reserve account is not allowed to go into deficit.
Representative Tinsley.
A follow-up question. I see a couple of these are like the staff development and the class size reserve accounts that are being proposed for elimination here, and also, I guess, line 24 when you refer to specific funding. Are you referring to specific categories that the state would set aside as categoricals up here at the state level?
These were all categoricals at one point in time, yes.
Ms. Johnson, I guess my question is, it sounds like you're okay with keeping them if there's a specific categorical funding stream from the state that would go there, but not okay if there's not a specific funding stream. And if that is your line of thinking, then are you supporting specific categoricals to be set aside at the state level, or would you just like to get rid of all categoricals and all reserve accounts?
Ms. Johnson, that's a big question.
That's a big question. categoricals have to be. Well, there are certain categoricals that are of value and that we need to be able to have money for specific purposes that might in other cases not allow us, for instance, operating capital is a categorical aid. It is a reserve fund balance. It is not on this particular list to be eliminated as a reserve fund balance. It does allow us to maintain our buildings, to do things that need to be done, to have equipment, computer equipment, and not to have all of the dollars going to supplies, to salaries, to benefits, to other kinds of activities within the district. I think there is a role for categoricals. I think what has happened here with the reserved fund balances is an attempt to micromanage what in many cases in many districts are very small dollar amounts, which can take away from the big picture and looking at the broader impact of having multiple small categories. You're right, this is somewhat of a mix. There are some things here. Grad standards accounts went away in 1999. Like I say, parental involvement, 1995. Just the funding isn't there. The reserve, the most districts, I believe, and this is something maybe the state people can tell you how much money sits in any of these accounts at this point in time. I think this, to clean up some of this would help. And as I said to start with, this still leaves us with, I believe, 15 to 16 reserved account areas.
Okay, any more questions for this witness? Otherwise, Ms. Schwa, would you like to testify? Welcome.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members. Grace Schwab of the Minnesota School Boards Association, and I will be short and brief. We really appreciate Representative Cora's bill. It's great to see sort of another look outside the box at some of these funds, giving districts a little bit more flexibility to decide to either maintain them or in fact to have them part of their general fund. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Okay, any questions for Ms. Schwab from members? Thank you, Ms. Schwab. Ms. Allswiger, you wanted to testify also? Welcome.
Hi, Mr. Chair, members, Jan Allswiger, Education, Minnesota. I think that parts of this bill makes a lot of sense in terms of the obsolete programs, and there probably isn't necessary to have all these. And I think we could probably have a big kumbaya here with some of these programs that could, with some of these line items here that could be eliminated. We certainly would have some very serious concerns about eliminating some of them. The five, I think, that were listed were very good examples: staff development, ALCs, the contract alternatives, basic skills, and first grade preparedness. And I would just throw out something here. Sometimes school districts or even school buildings make decisions about the spending that they want to do in terms of, let's say, for example, staff development, that they might want to use more of their money one year versus another year because of the cost of what they're going to implement. This allows them some flexibility to plan for the future. Now, we would probably argue as well that we would encourage districts to use their staff development money the way it was allocated to make sure that they're spending it and they're keeping up to speed, et cetera. But there are some local decisions. And I would just like to clarify one thing for Representative Sikora. There was because I saw some questions being raised, possibly. And that is that the staff development funds are to be spent, the 2% is to be reserved for staff development. However, the legislature decided to loosen that a bit and say that if a majority of the teachers and a majority of the school board want to spend anything less than 2%, that they may do that all the way to 0% with the vote of the majority vote of the teachers and the school board. So how they decide to what they decide to do with that money is you know, not a decision that's made here. But I just wanted to clarify that. And that, you know, that might mean that in a district that there might be even less money that they put in that reserve, and it would be even more reason why you probably wouldn't want to mess with it. And then you have the question of why do you have categoricals? And I'm not here to debate one way or the other, but if you have a categorical for a particular reason, it means you want that money spent that way. And so then after it hasn't been spent, you have to ask the question, why didn't they spend it? So I will leave it at that, Mr. Chair. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Allswiger. I think that was an excellent point that you made. When we give the flexibility, it's interesting to see how it ends up getting used, and then that does set up conversation for the future in terms of how we should do that. So thank you for that. Any other questions?
May I just ask a question of Mr. Strom?
Representative Sikora.
Mr. Strom, are any of the things listed here actually listed as categoricals in our bills? I'm trying to check that out. I don't believe so. The only thing we did start, and you gifted and talented, but that isn't the same as the one that's listed here. Is that correct?
Mr. Strom.
Mr. Chair, Representative Sikora, the first grade preparedness program still exists as a categorical funding program. But the rest, essentially, of the ones that are listed there that I would call categoricals are all part of the general ed system. For instance, the staff development reserve is a reserve on general education revenue.
Right.
I think the issue that may be a little blurred here is the issue of when there's still statutory language directing a school district to spend money, the district is required to spend its money in the way that the statute directs it, regardless of whether there's a reserve account. The use of the word reserve account in the language requires the school district to set up a separate account, as Ms. Johnson was saying, and continue to carry that account forward on their books. So you can still, as a legislature, direct the school district to spend money in a particular manner without establishing a reserve account.
Thank you. Anything else, Representative Sikora?
If there's no more questions, I would just again say I would hope this would be laid over for possible inclusion.
Mr. Chair.
Okay, Representative Graham.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think this bill makes a lot of sense. I don't know why we, you know, make school districts go through these gymnastics when we aren't giving categorical funding for these purposes.
Okay. With that, we will lay this House File 4071 as amended over, lay it over for possible inclusion. Thank you,
Representative. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you, members.
Representative Abler. Welcome to the committee, Representative Abler.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I think the bill will be moved for a possible inclusion. And there's an amendment to the strike part of the bill, I think. Are you aware of that?
Yes, we do have that. And I will move your bill, Representative Abler, House File 1167. For and possible inclusion. If you want to deal with the amendment now?
Right, yeah, just to get the bill so it's clear what we're talking about. We're going to delete the demo.
Okay, Representative Abler, is this a verbal amendment? Did we just eliminate this section?
Is it written up, or I don't know if it was written or if it's just verbal.
It's being handed out now. Oh, it's not. Okay. Representative Abler, I think what I understand is we're simply striking sections 1 and 3.
Correct, Mr. Chair.
Okay, I'll move that amendment. Do we have to label that? We'll do it as an oral amendment, Representative Abler, to strike sections 1 and 3. And you're okay with that?
Sure. I like oral amendments, Mr. Chair.
Okay, all in favor of the oral amendment to strike sections 1 and 3 from House File 1167, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Amendments adopted. You may proceed.
Thank you, Chair. I won't say a word. I'll send my testifier in the interest of time and clarity. So.
Who are you? Why are you here?
Madam Chair, representatives, committee members, thank you for the opportunity to speak with you today briefly about this bill. My name is Tom Citrin-Heisem, and I chair the Legislative Issues Committee of Literacy Minnesota, which is a statewide professional advocacy group for adult basic education. And I also work in St. Paul in the area in the Adult Basic Education Consortium. And I'd like to just briefly discuss three things today. And those include the demands on the AB delivery system right now, how limited funding is creating really a crisis for us, and why it is important to fund ABE because it's more and more crucial to the economic health of Minnesota. So I'll begin by talking a little bit about services. Most of you know this, so I'll spend very little time on it. But in fiscal year 05, we had more than 80,000 students statewide in ESL, basic skills, adult diploma, GED, workplace services, and family literacy. 18% of those people were unemployed, and 19% were on public assistance, 10% were incarcerated. So we serve the people who are most in need, who if not served, will cost the state more and more in the years to come. If they don't have the training they need to become employed, to take good care of their children, they'll come back to the system in other ways. Also, I'd like to note that over half of the students that we serve are refugees or immigrants, and that services provided through the adult basic education system play a really key role in helping them gain the skills they need for employment. The cost is about $540 per student statewide, which we think is pretty much a bargain. In terms of the demands on the system, there's been tremendous growth in recent years in our immigrant and refugee population. English language services have increased by 63% over the past several years. And there's also strong demand among native-born Americans for GED, workplace skills, and related services due to the economic problems we've been through in the last few years. And the system is being asked to deliver more than is possible with the current resources we have. So in terms of the system being kind of what I would call in crisis, but I really don't believe this is crying wolf. Our funding has been frozen since 2003, and during that time, the demand for our services has grown really tremendously. Adult basic education is forward-funded, which means that the hours of service in a given year determine the amount of money funded in the next year. So as total hours increased 56% over the past 5 years statewide, but our funding has been frozen in the last 3 years, programs really stretched in every possible way to meet student needs. And the funding per student hour decreased because we had a set amount of funding and the hours kept going up, so if you divide one into the other, you get less and less per hour. So over the past several years, the state contract hour rate has declined 19% from $5.72 an hour to $4.61. So I guess the only way I can think of to drive this home is just to imagine that your own household income was frozen for 4 years. You were subject to inflationary pressures, and then maybe during that time you had another child or a relative's child came to live with you because of crisis. And over the years, you stretched and stretched and stretched, and ultimately you get to the point where you really were hurting very badly. And that's really where we are. Consortia around the state have stretched resources as much as they should be, as much as they can be, We have classes that are larger than they should be. Waiting lists are popping up more and more. I think it's very interesting. Barry Schaefer from the Department of Education is currently doing a survey of all consortia statewide to see how they're doing. 3/4 of all programs around Minnesota that he's surveyed so far, this includes greater Minnesota as well as urban areas, are for the first time saying that next year, if they don't get some additional funding, they really will need to cut hours, staff positions, and so on. So we're at the point where we've done what we can with the resources we have, and we're really going to be needing to cut in some significant ways. Just to talking about the future and why it's so important, I believe, to the economy of Minnesota, the according to the state demographer in the 2000 census data, the growth of the labor force in Minnesota is declining rapidly, and employers expect a very tight job market in the next 2 years as people retire and they have to be replaced. And yet the new jobs are created that often require more skills. 13% of Minnesotans 25 and over lack a high school diploma or its equivalent. The Minnesota Business Partnership recently reported that state employers are reporting very high costs to train and retrain workers whose lack of basic skills or ability to speak English is affecting their bottom line. We have over 255,000 foreign-born people in Minnesota, most of whom came here since 1990, and nearly half of them, or 46%, have limited English skills. Both newcomers and native-born Americans and Minnesotans who lack basic skills must be trained to fill jobs. It affects both urban areas, as in St. Paul, where 22% of the citizens, that's 1 in 5, don't speak English at home, and greater Minnesota. Pat Thomas from Marshall will speak in a couple of minutes about this. In Wilmer, 17% of the residents don't speak English. So in bringing those people into the mainstream and giving them the English and the basic skills they need is really essential. So just in closing, before I pass the torch over to Pat, I just really would ask you to seriously consider supporting the two funding requests in this bill. One is for a 3% increase in the formula, which would not solve the problem, but would help us begin to meet the needs a little bit more significantly, as well as a special temporary allocation to try to meet the backlog of services that refugees and immigrants are bringing to the table. In a time when we're very concerned as a nation, as a state, about immigration and the effect of immigration, what we see is that new Americans want to learn English, and they want to be productive and responsible, take care of their children, have good jobs, and they want to help employers and build the economy. And I believe if they need to access the basic services that will enable them to do this, that we need to respond positively. I will now turn the mic over to Pat Thomas, who's the ABE director in the Marshall area. I will also follow him up here very briefly from a Hmong student from Roseville.
Welcome, Ms. Thomas.
Thank you. Madam Chair, committee members, my name is Pat Thomas, and I'm a lead coordinator of Southwest ABE Consortium covering 18 counties in southwestern Minnesota. I'd like to thank you for the opportunity to speak today, and also thank you for the investment you've made in ABE programs that prepare adults and for our workforce. In 2004 and 5, as Tom spoke to, we had 80,452 learners. Primarily, all these adults use these services to gain greater employability skills. Our program in southwestern Minnesota served 2,312 adults during last year in response to the economic needs of our area. 59% of our learners were ESL learners, which is higher than the state average. The refugee and immigrant population comprised the majority of the food processing plant's workforce in southwestern Minnesota. These populations are extremely resilient and hardworking individuals who seek to make a better life for their families. Other services we provide, which reflects ABE statewide, are GED, basic skills enhancement, computer skills, helping individuals so they're not scared the thing isn't going to eat them so they can get a job. Citizenship, workplace-based classes. We have classes that are in turkey processing plants and at Schwann's. And previously, we provided family literacy services but no longer were able to due to funding reductions. I would suggest to this committee that through these services, you receive an awesome bang for your buck. You see, not just literacy skill enhancement happens. You see ESL instructors helping students making doctor's appointments, helping fill out forms, helping with bank questions, helping parents connect with their child's school, or the ABE agency helps these adults by referring them to other resources who can assist in these matters. You see, GED instructors helping GED students connect with colleges, as most have no family support that are going to encourage them to go forward. You see ABE staff helping students find resources to find job listings, and sometimes assisting in filling out job applications or building resumes. As I said, money invested in ABE gives quite a bang for the buck. I'd like to highlight the need to consider the importance of investing financially in these programs. Not only through these services does an individual gain skills to succeed in today's world, but ABE is one of the key players in providing a viable workforce to allow for our state's economic growth. There looms in the near future a workforce shortage statewide. Matt Kramer, the former commissioner of Minnesota DEED, has shared this fact several times. This shortage of a viable employee pool is already beginning in southwest and south central Minnesota. The Marshall area is already at around a 2% unemployment rate. And also, along with my testimony, was handed out a paper put together by Minnesota DEED people indicating that the workforce shortage is starting in southwestern and south central Minnesota already. I would also share with you, not only do we need more prepared persons to enter our workforce, but also many of our current workforce need to raise their literacy and math skills to allow businesses to compete in our world markets today. I would encourage you to provide your support for a 3% increase in the ABE formula and an additional $3 million over 2 years for intensive ESL services for refugees and immigrants. With these additional funds, ABE has an ability to help prepare our workforce for the demands made by businesses for competent workers, the end result being statewide economic growth and gainfully employed individuals who generate additional tax revenue. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, Ms. Thomas. We have also, let's see, who is
Chu.
Chu Lohr?
Yep.
Nice to meet you, Mr. Lohr.
Yeah.
Would you please go ahead and introduce yourself for the record?
Okay.
Thank you. My name is Chu Lohr. I live at 17 Sherburn Avenue in St. Paul. I am married. I have 7 children. My family came from Thailand on August 6, 2004. We have been in the United States about 8 months. Now, I go to a Rockville Adult Learning Center school because I want to learn English and get a diploma or college degree so I can get a good job and take care of my family. ESL class are very important for the new arrival because right now most of the companies in the United States they require a diploma and thus you have experience. We still have many immigration from Thailand does not have school to learn because the Roseville Adult Learning Center and Health Center are full. I think and I believe if we cannot get education, we can help about my family or themselves. Please keep the ABC program going because this program helpful for the immigration. Please support this program. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mr. Lohr. You did an excellent job with your English.
Thank you.
All right, are there questions from members of the committee for Mr. Lohr or Ms. Thomas or Mr. Sitkin-Heisen? Representative Abler, do you have any other comments?
Well,
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm not sure what part you want to delve into today, especially if there's a certain aspect you want to know about. If the refugee part's important to you, the base program, if you're interested about rural issues, how that's going compared to the urban. We present a general testimony, but if there's specific things you want to know about, we can give you that information as well.
Members, do you have any specific questions? Representative Demmer.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. I don't really have a question. I do have a comment, I guess. Thank you, Representative Abler, for bringing this up. I think you mentioned rural, metro. I think this is a statewide issue. We have immigrants all over down in my area. I'm from Southeast, as you know, at Rochester. We have Hispanic, we have Mexican people. We have Somali people. I think it's really important that we look at this as a state and help people coming here succeed. I guess the only thought that I would have, Madam Chair and members, is sometimes I wonder about if ABE should be within the K-12 realm. I wonder sometimes if we maybe don't do what we should be doing when it's in this area. And it's just a out-of-the-box thought, but that within K-12 we're focusing on school buildings and children and early childhood and graduation requirements and that sort of thing. And ABE seems to me to be an economic development type of an issue that I would is work with immigrants. So thank you for bringing the issue up. It brings up conversation. It keeps us aware of the problem, and that's all I got to say about that.
Is there a comment from anyone at the table?
Madam Chair, I could address just the difference between the two things we're asking for and what they might accomplish.
Okay.
They're overlapping. But the original formula, which was developed about, I think, 6 years ago now, originally had a built-in increase every year of up to 8%, depending on how that correlated with the increase in services. And then for budgetary reasons, this was stopped, as I mentioned, 3 years ago. And by increasing the funding to some extent, what it will especially help, I believe, is the services that are less intensive in terms of the number of hours they require, and this less, they cost a lot to provide, but they don't generate very much revenue. Things like GED, adult diploma, and some of those things are not as intensive in terms of students being in class 20 hours a week as in an intensive ESL class for somebody on public assistance, generates more of the money needed to help cover the cost of that. And then in terms of the money for refugees and immigrants, many of you are certainly aware of the large number of unanticipated refugees that have come to Minnesota in the last 2 to 3 years. And the special allocation for those people, for services for those people, would enable us to provide ESL classes in an intensive way to help meet their needs for basic English. So I think both pieces of the request are very, very important. In terms of where ABE best belongs, I mean, it's probably a longer discussion. I think we bear most in common with the K-12 system because we're an educational program, which also very much has economic development perspectives and as part of it. So, but I think it's really part of a longer discussion that we might have at some other time, depending on your interest.
I don't think we'll transfer it today. Representative Greiling.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Members, I just wanted to say I strongly support this bill, and wherever the funding comes from, you know, I think sometimes we should take funding from more than one source for programs, and, you know, if it could be economic development and education finance. We had that discussion earlier this morning on another topic that, you know, there's a lot of things that overlap here, and I don't know why we couldn't be a little more innovative and take funding from more than one source. But it's true that we do give the short end of the stick to community education, and I think that's very, very short-sighted.
Madam Chair,
Did you have a response to that?
Well, there was just another comment up here, almost done.
Well, Representative Erickson also had a question, so let's take her question.
Thank you, Chair Sakura. Representative Abler or others, to what extent does workforce development make referrals to ABE or your other programs?
I would speak to that down in our area. We work very, very closely, and what we try and do in our area is assure that we are doing the educational piece and they are doing the piece of trying to help the people find the jobs. We do not try to duplicate services at all in our area. And you have to do that with limited funding. So I would say in our area we do an extremely good job of working together to make sure the money goes the farthest for that common customer.
And Madam Chair, follow-up.
Representative Erickson.
I'll address this question to you again. In Marshall, do any of the industries offer any kind of financial support or, in fact, space for training? Because if they're workers, you know, mm-hmm. teaching English as a second language or for, just teaching the basic skills that these immigrants need.
Ms. Thomas.
I think a lot of times in a lot of companies, this is a new concept to be bringing ESL into the workplace mm-hmm. to be able to provide enhanced skills for their workers. Under a WIA incentive grant that we were very fortunate to be able to get, we started doing this. We are doing some of those things down in turkey processing plants. We ourselves are working with Schwann's and bringing ESL classes to them and in discussion of bringing more classes out to them. But I think this is a new concept. But we are working as hard as we can with these companies to encourage them to allow us to come on site and to be able to serve their employees in a fashion that is functional for their jobs.
Madam Chair, if I could also respond.
May I just ask one little question of her, and then you may speak too. Ms. Thomas, I'm just curious. When you go out to like Schwann's, does Schwann's pay you something for coming in there and teaching English, or do you just get to use their space and meet their employees there?
At this time, Schwann's is helping to support the cost of the instructor we are taking out there. Not the total cost of the instructor, but they provide the space. And again, we are looking at expanding the array of services that we would be doing out on site.
All right, that's what I was curious about. I really like, you know, that method of working with the business community. I'm sorry, sir. Go ahead.
Right, thank you, Madam Chair. I just wanted to add very briefly that all state consortia are required to have what's called a memorandum of understanding with their workforce center spelling out what specific roles we will play. And there's been significant emphasis really statewide in the last few years on enhancing and strengthening those connections with the workforce development centers and with employers. And also to the point of the work with the employer investment, most of us have a practice of when we do services for employers, they have to buy in, as they do in Marshall, in some significant way, either providing space or helping directly fund the services, giving their employees some paid time, a few hours a week to attend the classes, because we do believe very strongly that it needs to be a mutual relationship. Thank you.
All right. Are there any further questions for Representative Abler or his witnesses? Hearing none, this bill, 1167, will be laid over for possible inclusion.
Thank you, Madam Chairman.
Thank you. All right. We're to our final bill, possibly final bill of the year. Oh, wait. Am I missing one?
Yes, you are.
No, I know it. Erdahl.
10 seconds at the last.
Oh, I'm sorry. I missed you, Representative. Pardon me. All right, Representative Erickson.
Madam Chair, I'd like to move 3307 to be laid over and considered for the omnibus K-12 finance bill. Madam Chair and members, 3307 is something that I think is a long time in coming, but it's here now, and that's to include technology and information literacy standards in what's called the Common Core of Teaching Knowledge and Skills that the Board of Teaching designs and then passes on to the schools of education, or as we call them, the teacher preparation programs. In addition, this bill also requests that the Board of Teaching develop a 7-year cycle to review all the standards of effective practice. It is probably time that we review those since they were enacted when I served on the board in the early 90s. And it would be, I think, very appropriate for that kind of cycle to begin. Madam Chair, the reason this bill is before you is that I did receive a fiscal note on it, but the Board of Teaching will absorb those costs in light of the fact that this is something they plan to do for the last few years, and we just gave them that little incentive now to get it done. So with that, Madam Chair, I'll stand for questions.
All right. Are there any questions for Representative Erickson? Hearing none, Representative, your bill will be laid over. That was way too easy, wasn't it? All right.
Now we are down to essentially the last bill of the year. And is Representative Erdahl in the room?
He was.
Oh, you know, we giveth and we taketh away here, don't we?
Madam Chair.
Representative Demmer.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I think he's just outside. I just saw him out there. So.
Madam Chair, I move to dismiss.
Representative Erdahl, you are up. And we wait. We await you.
You're too quick, Representative.
Yeah, he thought I had more
time. I'll try to take longer.
Well, we were trying to give you more time, Representative Erdahl, but, you know, if you don't need it, it's okay.
This should be nice and quick.
All right. Representative Erdahl, I will move House File 3759 before the committee for possible inclusion.
Thank you, Madam Chairman, members. This is a school bus transportation bill. It's a federal conformity to the 2005 school bus standards. You do have an amendment before you, and once the amendment, I think there are actually four of them, once they are included, we should just be nice technical language and just like.
All right, we have A5 before us. Representative, why don't you first tell us a little bit about the bill and then tell us what your amendments do? Or Mr. Lundell, Mr. Botsick, which one of you would
want to do? You want to do the explanation before the amendment then?
Well, okay, let's put it in the shape you want it. That's fine. All right, tell us what A5 does.
Okay, there are four things. The first, just basically the subdivision 1A makes sure that the discipline is on the students and not on the individual school. The next one ensures that competency be done, the school bus driver competencies be done before any alternative options are considered. And then, I don't know if you have this written, but we'd like to strike Section 12. The Department of Public Safety had some concerns about cost there. We would strike that. And we'd also strike Section 4, dealing with the cost allocation and the method of trying to determine accurate cost of special education funding. So strike 12, strike Section 4, and then the others that you have, and it'll be just a nice, easy bill.
Okay, then, but 4 and 12 were not actually in your written amendment.
No.
Correct. Okay, so we are striking those two plus what's in your written amendment, which is Section 2, right?
Yes.
All right, and anything else?
Not. I would hope not. I think
that's a total.
I sure hope so, Madam Chair.
All right. Thank you, Representative Erdahl.
Section 12.
All right. Now would you like to address the bill?
Yes.
Let's vote on both. Well, let's vote first on the verbal. Striking of 4 and 12. All those in favor, please say aye.
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 Opposed? Amendment is adopted. And then we will look at the written amendment before us, A5, and I would move that amendment, and that strikes Section 2 and adds a little bit of language. All those in favor, please say aye.
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 Opposed? Amendment adopted. All right. Now we can hear all about your bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Appreciate that. Let Mr. Brad Lundell.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, Brad Lundell today working with the Minnesota Association for Pupil Transportation. Section 1 of the bill makes a couple of small changes. Requires that students in grade 9 or 10 receive training in laws and proper procedures when operating a motor vehicle in the vicinity of a school bus. Some school districts only use that every other year for driver's training as opposed to every year, and so this would give local districts some flexibility.
Mr. Lundell, can we just clarify something? It seems to me this is our compliance with the new federal standards. Is that
this
correct?
This is not compliance with federal. This is an addition for Minnesota schools to make it more flexible for Minnesota schools to provide the driver's training.
But most of the bill is...
Most of the bill is that.
So as you go through it, would you clarify what's what?
Okay, I will.
Thank you.
Section 3 adds school daycare facility to a place where a student can be picked up or dropped off. That is not a federal compliance issue.
Is this a school daycare facility or any daycare facility?
School daycare facility, because any licensed daycare facility is already included. A school daycare facility is not included under current law. This adds school daycare facility to a pickup and drop off.
Okay.
Section 3 is, that is Section 3. Section 4 has been struck. Section 5 is federal standards. Section 6 is federal conformity. Section 7 is federal conformity. Section 8 is federal conformity. Section 9 is federal conformity. Section 10 is a in Minnesota it's prompted by the federal conformity issues, but we've changed the language a bit. Gary, do you have something to add on that? Or
no, Madam Chair, Gary Botzik for Minnesota School Bus Operators Association. We represent the 59% of the fleet that's privatized.
And welcome, Mr. Botzik.
Thank you, Madam Chair. This is a Minnesota exception. I think Brad just described it. You know, it's not federal conformity. It's a Minnesota particular, but it does relate to the height of the and how you measure the height of the backs of the seats in the school bus.
Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Chair Sikora. Mr. Botzik, since you're here representing that association, any discussion about what this might add to the cost of a school bus if there has to be a minimum cushion depth and a seat back height? Does this mean a reconfiguration now within the school bus?
Madam Chair and Representative Erickson, no. This, if you look at the effective date of these new provisions will not go into effect until January 1 of 2007.
Right.
So anything that's in the process, in the manufacturing process, on order or on bid, would be allowed to come through under old rules. So there no school district or no private bus company would be caught changing standards in midstream or mid-production. Cost-wise, the manufacturers tell us that when we put this bill together, and there are three manufacturers, as I understand it, are making buses of different seats at different heights now, so it's a matter of pulling that one from the inventory.
Thank you.
Okay. The Section 11 I have in front of me, and I don't know if it's the same one you have in front of you, that was amended out in transportation. If there's anything in there that talks about a fourth offense, disqualifying for a fourth offense, that should have been pulled out in Transportation Committee by amendment. The Section 12 that I have talks about what was amended with the amendment that called for competencies to be shown before bus drivers could receive alternative assessments.
That's our 11.
That's your 11. Okay, and that was changed by amendment. Section 12 has been dropped. And I think that would, and then the repealers are also federal update language.
You mentioned Section 11, and I wasn't quite clear. Is there something in there that we're supposed to be removing?
No, I was thinking, I've got an old copy of the bill here as I was going through, and the Section 11 I have has already been removed from the bill.
All right.
No.
Questions, Representative Gemmer.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm going to go back to Section 10, and I might have missed this in the discussion. We're saying that all seats have a minimum cushion depth of 15 inches and a seat back height of at least 20 inches. And if this was answered, I apologize. But, Mr. Botzik, I know that you're representing school bus operators. We're not telling them to do something that's going to cause them to go spend a bunch of money and I'm going to get phone calls about.
My question.
Did you ask that same question? I'm sorry.
Madam Chair and Representative, I apologize if I didn't answer it.
Mr.
I was asked it, though.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Bostic, for letting me off the hook.
Try again, Mr. Bostic.
Yeah, let me rephrase that. We don't anticipate extra costs, as I mentioned in the previous question. These manufacturers have inventory, and when you order a bus from one of those three manufacturers, they have these various seat sizes, heights in inventory, or will manufacture them to spec. So when you one of our members or a school district orders a bus or multiple buses, that is it should not necessarily be a new or add-on cost.
Yes, Madam Chair.
Representative Demmer.
Mr. Bostic, how about if I already have a bus that's 7 years old that doesn't have these kind of seats? Are we now telling me that I've got to go out and buy all new seats for my bus?
Mr. Bostic.
Madam Chair and Representative, no. These are new standards for new manufactured buses, so we're going to obviously allow buses of various ages to run their course.
Mr. Bostic, is there a limit on how many years a bus can be in existence? I mean, at some point, you have to be able to, like 30 years from now, do you have to have this on your bus? Do you have to have these new seats?
Madam Chair, to the best of my knowledge, there's no effective date where you have to be in new compliance, but they are these buses are inspected annually on a regular basis, and if they don't perform, they obviously watch the mileage on these buses. Department of Public Safety does inspect them, as I mentioned, annually, and they certainly try not to run them any longer than they can, or they move them out of the to and from. They might run them to a secondary or a backup scenario, but they certainly try to keep the best fleet and the best vehicles online or on the front line and move them out. Appreciate them as you would this might be a bad analogy, a family car I shouldn't do this, because pickup trucks on the farm or something like that. But no, they are highly regulated, shall we say, and highly inspected. Therefore, the best vehicles economically feasible are on the front line every morning and every evening.
All right. Representative Erickson?
Oh, Madam Chair, and this is just a notation for Ms. Detman. That amendment to page 11, line 11, we're inserting in front of A. Maybe you should note that A will not be capitalized in the revision. It will be a lowercase A, and there probably should be a comma after competencies.
We agree to that, Madam Chairman.
We will consider that just a language correction.
Just to help out the revisers so they don't have to make that correction in the revisers bill.
I'm told that it happens automatically in the revisers system. They automatically clean up those little kinds of errors. Isn't that wonderful? So, Representative Biskins.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Madam Chair, I apologize for coming in a little late, being called to the woodshed. I mean, the Speaker's office once again. Madam Chair, there seems to be some confusion on this side of the table. Was there a roll call requested on this bill?
Not that I'm aware of.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Representative Biskins, you've been had. And I think I know by whom.
I'm
sure
Representative
Dorn's
pretty red.
I'm here, Madam Chair, I must have misspoke. It was on the GDWR at 21,500 pounds. And I Representative Biskins must have misinterpreted my comments.
Yeah, so,
Madam Chair, just
Mr. Lundell.
Yeah, just a comment to your talk about bus aid. One of the things that the school bus, there used to be a school bus purchase levy, and that was sunset back, and I believe for Pay 96 or Pay 97. And since that time, we certainly have seen the age of fleets get older. And it's something that I think as we look in the future, the school bus is the safest mode of transportation in the world today, but there are new buses coming online and new features that would be made available. It would be, I think that the entire school bus community would
very much welcome a revisiting of bus acquisition policy and being able to get newer buses on the road. So I just did want to point that out.
Briefly, Mr. Lundell, before we call an end to this, what are some of the new features on buses that make them safer?
Well,
on school buses.
Well, the things that we've talked about, Madam Chair, the things that we've talked about in here today, I think in terms of lighting, in terms of the seat back height, that's another issue that you know, it's not universally held. I mean, better chassis, as we saw with the Carpenter bus of a year ago. You know, stronger, you know, bus chassis. The whole compartmentalization issue on the seating and you know safer seats for when times rides do get rough. Those types of things.
Representative Demmer.
Madam Chair, I would suspect just to weigh in things like anti-lock brakes, things like suspension systems for comfort. I think things such as computerized diagnosis of problems that come up with buses that might not help with the students but help with the operators keep costs down. Lots of things going on in that area.
Thank you, Representative Demmer. Are there any further questions or comments from members of the committee? There will not be a roll call vote. None having been requested. Any final words, Representative Erdahl?
No, Madam Chair. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Representative. And thank you for having that all ready to roll.
Another Erdahl bill just slides right through. Thank you.
Right. Thank you, gentlemen. And that bill will be laid over for possible inclusion. And I think I still have minutes. Representative Heidgar can move
yes.
the minutes.
Very good minutes. So moved.
Any corrections or additions to the minutes? Hearing none, all those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Minutes are adopted. And I think with that, we have come to the end of our business of bill hearing for this committee, unless something really exciting comes along for Tuesday. So this meeting is adjourned.